Welcome to Part 2. The title of Part 2 is called Getting Started. Licensing is a game that everyone can get involved in, and Rand walks you through the entire process no matter where you are in the game right now. So in Part 2, you'll hear what your options are for getting started and how to determine your best approach. You'll also hear an almost unknown way to compete with the intellectual property big boys, a very simple tactic to lock up exclusive rights deals, an almost magic way to get a fast start in international licensing, the one best way to avoid legal pitfalls, two overlooked places to source intellectual property, the single critical key to making your idea marketable for licensing, the simple little tip that will show you what your product is worth, what the best industries are profit-wise for licensing, how a small company can approach a big company and get a deal, what categories are the hottest right now for licensing, who's the right person to talk with at any given company, exactly where to go, what to do for making connections in intellectual property, breakthrough solutions for drafting easy IP agreements. Licensing is a huge part of every market and a billion-dollar industry in itself. The opportunities it opens up are not only mind-boggling, they're also completely obtainable, even for the average small business owners struggling in today's economy. And in this interview of Part 2, you'll hear all about it.
You know, the interesting thing when you get into licensing entertainment, especially movies such as Batman, there's a lot of product opportunities in there, and sharp entrepreneurs can recognize these opportunities. And it's an interesting story because, again, you know, in looking at all the entrepreneurs who had come to license the Batman movie early on, the story of the Batmobile ride-ins and ride-ons, again, is a small company that was very small. They were selling these products, and what a ride-on is, and you've probably seen it, is kids get these oversized vehicles that they can sit on, and sometimes they have pedals in it, so the kids pedal them, and they're basically plastic bodies that are shaped like a car or a train engine or whatever the character may be. They also have ride-ons that are electric where the kid sits on it and it travels very slowly, maybe 1 mile an hour.
Yeah, they're over there in the Target by the bikes.
Exactly, you've seen those, and those are called ride-ons. There's also a variation of that called ride-ins that happen to be a car, you know, so somebody wants to do a Mercedes or something for the little kid, they can sit inside. Again, it's a plastic body, and they're electric, and the kid steps on it and it travels 1 mile an hour. So naturally, in the movie Batman, you have the Batmobile. And for many of these products, by the way, you know, some of them can be fairly expensive. You've got electronics, they're very big and bulky, and they make them in China and ship them over. So the opportunity here for this company when they've come along is they were looking for a way to expand their business again. And so they come in and saw the Batmobile and said, hey, we'd like to do ride-ons and ride-ins. Now, this was a real niche category, and the interesting thing for them is it's not a category that was covered by any major toy deals, because most of these big toy companies are not in that business. It's very specialized. So once again, here's an entrepreneur with a very specialized product looking for a way, how can I really build my business? So they came to my office at Warner Brothers, and we talked about what their products are, and, you know, at the end of the day, they walked out with this license to create these ride-on and ride-in Batmobiles.
Have they done any licensing deal with those ride-in or ride-ons
they
before?
They actually had not. And this, again, is the opportunity. They were doing their own thing, and so they were very, very small. They weren't selling much product at all, maybe a couple $100,000 a year. It's a very small business. It was two principals in the company. So when they had come to Warner Brothers, they didn't even know if they could get the license. But, of course, you know, it was at that point in time when we were happy to welcome anybody who was ready to license Batman. So once again, entrepreneurs who took a shot at it came in and they got the Batman license, and they were willing to take a risk there. And then, of course, what the opportunity did for them, as the Batman property started to open up immediately now, their business was changing very rapidly because suddenly they had major retailers like Walmart and Kmart and Target who suddenly were very interested in those ride-ons because they were a nice item to be putting there in the store as people came in looking for Batman product. And as a result of getting the Batman license, their business grew very, very rapidly. They got some very large orders from those major retailers. Their sales shot through to the millions of dollars in selling those products. And it basically provided the foundation for the company to grow very rapidly and look at some other opportunities. And that's a great example of a company who's in a product category where perhaps it's not selling very strong or it's limited, and being able to identify one of these entertainment properties and saying, geez, what if we applied that to our product? Where could we go with that? It worked very well. It turned out to be probably one of the most popular items, especially among the studio executives at the holidays. Very interesting story there. You know, they like to look at the entertainment property. Well, of course, they had the electric Batmobile ride-ins for kids, you know, 3 to 5 years old. Well, naturally, the studio executives at the holidays were contacting the licensing division saying, hey, I want that for my kid or my grandkid. So that was an added little bonus for them. A lot of people don't realize that when you get licenses from these studios, there's a lot of places that you can go with these licenses that open up opportunities. And one of them is that within the studios, there's many other things that are happening in other divisions, or just by the nature of the product, what was happening in this case is these products were suddenly being ordered by the senior executive heads of the studio, and they were being given to their kids and grandkids at the holidays, and so suddenly they were getting a lot of high-profile exposure. There were a couple of other events that were occurring around the holidays, around the Batman movies, and so these were great items for, like, contests.
For more exclusive interviews on business, marketing, advertising, and copywriting, go to Michael Senoff's HardToFindSeminars.com. And so was this a company manufacturing out of China?
That's what they were doing.
So it was a Chinese company?
Well, no, it was an American company, but they made them in China.
Oh, I got you.
Okay. But their particular category, the write-in and write-on, is a very, very challenging category. You know, you've got a vehicle here that you're going to charge $100, $150, $200 for, depending on what it is, and it's very large and very bulky. So to be able to bring it in, shipping costs, display it in retail, you know, generally they'd go to a retail and they might take in one or two pieces of it because it didn't sell a lot. But suddenly they put this Batman license on it, and all of a sudden their product was being ordered up in places they hadn't had an opportunity to get into. Plus they were getting opportunities to sell it in or showcase it many times in events and promotions simply because it was a very visible product for the movie. In other words, it was the Batmobile for little kids, as opposed to like a little car or something like that, a miniature version of the car. Here you had a ride-in version. So the visibility of the product made it ideal for a lot of interesting promotions that were being developed either through the DVD division or the music division or whoever it was. Because one of the things that happens when you take a license at a studio, the other division are always looking for ways to enhance what they're doing with that particular entertainment property. And one of the first places they go is they go to the licensing division because they want to take a look at the products that are there. Because in many cases, some of the products can make ideal giveaways or products that they can use in radio promotions or what's called field promotions. Many times when studios launch movies, they go out to individual key markets, the major markets, and what they do is they want to do localized promotions there to really build the awareness. Generally, these are a week or 2 weeks out prior to the movie. And in many cases, they'll want to put together special events, and the events will be a preview, a screening that will be to the VIPs in the local area. So one of the opportunities is a lot of times they like to look at products to give them away at these previews, these VIP parties. Great opportunity for a lot of these, you know, entrepreneurs who took these licenses early on. Suddenly now their products were showing up in goodie bags that were being given away to the press, that were being given away to the VIPs in the local communities. In some cases, there were promotions going on with radio stations or newspapers, and suddenly their products were showing up in newspaper ads as a giveaway that was a tie-in for a radio station. So again, opportunities that would have never been accessible on their own or would have cost hundreds of thousands of dollars to get the same media exposure, suddenly it was a phone call that says, can you provide 20 of your product to go out to these 10 markets? And now what's happening with these companies is it goes far beyond just their having the license selling in the retail. Now they're getting exposure in many, many different areas of the studio, which in and of itself opened up some opportunities because in some cases what happens is that division sees the products and now you can build a relationship out of that. Maybe it's the DVD division, the music, and they like the product that you have provided. And so what happens is now the communication opens up with that division and suddenly they're calling you up and saying, hey, you know, I really like the car. Can you make a boat or a plane or whatever the heck it is? And you could suddenly have a nice little piece of business where you're supplying them. And, of course, you know, with the movies, if you're going to be promoting a movie, they've got very, very large promotional budgets. And there's many cases where a lot of small companies have come in, done a good job with the initial license, gotten exposure within the other division, and suddenly they've got a nice little additional revenue source where the studio will call up and, you know, order up 50 or 100 or 1,000 of whatever they've got for giveaways.
Do you have an idea, like let's say a movie makes $100 million, like what kind of budget does a big feature film have in promotion? How much are they putting into it?
It's hard to say But I can tell you that, you know, on a movie like a Batman, for example, that the studio was putting a lot of importance behind, they're going to be spending $20, $30, $40 million in their media, not counting what the partners are going to bring to the table. And in some cases, if you're looking at these big budget films, like, you know, of recent, you had Avatar that went out, which is multi-billion-dollar, you're talking $150 million they're putting out against that. And this is the draw for entertainment, by the way. When you look at getting involved in entertainment properties, when you think of the magnitude of this exposure between the movie, the promotions, all the partners, the aggregate or sum total of all of this promotion between the movie promotions, the promotional partners, the licensed merchandise, the retailers, if you were to add that up, you're talking probably close to $1 billion of media exposure that is generated at so many different levels, meaning that the equivalent to be able to buy or access or tap into movie exposure, TV exposure, radio, retail, promotional partners all over the board at that level and at that intensity is enormous.
Poor man's advertising.
That's exactly what it is. And I think I had alluded to that in one of the previous stories that we had talked about. This is where the idea of poor man's advertising, where suddenly you are part of not only a brand, but if you're on a movie that happens to be spending a lot of money, suddenly you're part of a brand that's spending $150 or $200 million in advertising.
Here's something fascinating. I saw the story about the licensing company, I forgot the name, who licenses the dead celebrities.
Okay, sure.
There's opportunity for that as well.
Absolutely. Look at Elvis and Marilyn. Elvis and Marilyn have two of the largest licensing programs of any celebrities ever in history. And their programs run in perpetuity. I mean, they just continue to regenerate themselves because they become icons. The following of Elvis and Marilyn, I mean, Elvis's estate does hundreds of millions of dollars a year. Marilyn Monroe continues to be an incredibly strong. Her and Elvis are probably two of the most recognized celebrity estate licensing programs out there.
Do you know, like, when Marilyn Monroe died, who got the first license, who went after that?
Well, that's a fascinating story, actually. When she first died, there was the estate of Marilyn Monroe, and then there was about a half a dozen photographers who had all taken the photos. And the Marilyn Monroe licensing had been really involved in a quagmire of a lot of legal litigation going on between the estate and the photographers as to who owned rights to what. And that's why if you saw initially a lot of licensing was coming out on Marilyn Monroe that came from several sources simultaneously. Then there was a court ruling that said the estate had the rights, trying to consolidate it. And then, interesting enough, of late, I think it was a year or two ago, there was an appeal that was filed that reversed the decision and, in fact, said that the photographers did have the right to merchandise their photos. So it's been a very, very fascinating example of what can happen with deceased celebrities or dead celebrities. In that case, Marilyn was one in which it involves actually now several sources of her images now have the rights to license it. In the case of Elvis, that was a different story. Elvis' estate had maintained very, very close control over everything that he did from photography to movies. And so that's a case where the family had really done, you know, a very tight job of managing that. And, of course, after he died, had continued to manage that and has built up a very, very large licensing program around that.
Let's say there was a celebrity that an entrepreneur could go after that had no licensing whatsoever. Let's say celebrity from 30, 40, or 50 years ago, maybe in a niche, and you wanted to approach them or the estate and kind of get like an exclusive deal on their image or to do anything you want with their image. What do you call that?
Well, that's actually a great opportunity. The dead celebrity marketplace has actually been growing. There's a number of firms now that actually represent the estate. I mean, you've got Humphrey Bogart, you've got John Wayne, you've got James Dean, you've got Jimi Hendrix, Janis Joplin, and they're music icons as well as celebrities. You've got the Three Stooges. That actually is a great point. There are a lot of very, very niche opportunities out there in which dead celebrities can offer great licensing opportunities. Keep in mind that it's really the application of the license that makes the difference. How are you integrating this? And I'm not talking about just taking a celebrity image and putting on your product and think it's going to sell it, but I'm saying that you have something that you've developed as a product or a service, and it really integrates well and makes sense. And what the celebrity image can actually do for you is to enhance the value of that product in the consumer's mind. And there's a lot of opportunities to go after what might be considered the second or third tier celebrities, meaning those that hadn't been as popular from a merchandise standpoint, and get those for very, very little money because they don't have large programs behind them.
Well, let's say they have none, but some companies will probably go after a past celebrity and seal up a deal with some kind of exclusive and then start remarketing them and selling that past celebrityness.
depending on the way the deal, generally if an agent or an estate is representing it, they won't give them any sub-licensing rights, meaning when you get the license, you'll only have the rights to produce the products. They won't give you any rights to re-license or sub-license to other companies.
You're listening to an interview on Michael Senoff's hardtofindseminars.com. Is that not doable?
It is doable, actually, and that's actually a strategy that some companies can use depending on how they want to do it. In other words, there are some licensors, people who own properties, for example, that do not want to be involved in the continuous licensing program. So they'll either go to an agent to manage the program, or in some cases they may work with what's called a master licensee, and a master licensee will be given what's called sub-licensing rights. So, for example, they may work with, let's say, an apparel company or an electronics company or some lead licensee. We generally refer to it as a master licensee. But then they are giving rights to sub-license out to other.
That was the word I was looking for. You tie up a master deal.
Simple terms of how that concept works. I, as the master licensee, get the rights for a 5% royalty. And then what I do is I sub-license it for 8%. I keep 3 and I give you the 5. Because with the master licensee, the way the agreements work is it says, okay, you have the rights to sub-license under the same terms and conditions as your initial license, your original license. Which means that, you know, if we charge you 5%, any sub-license deal that you do, we're going to collect the 5% on it. If you negotiate greater than that, say 8%, that's great. You're going to keep whatever that difference is, but you're going to always pay us 5%. So that's essentially how they work. And so what happens is then they, in effect, become the licensing agent, although they may be manufacturing T-shirts or whatever they do. Now, there's another opportunity, and this is, again, depending on how you look at the market, there's many entrepreneurs who go out and they actually acquire the master licensing rights to a brand, a celebrity, whatever the case is, but they don't make anything. What they're basically doing is setting themselves up to go out and sub-license other categories and basically collect the difference. The royalty, like I gave you the example before, but they're actually not making anything. They just acquire the master, says, listen, give me all the master license rights. I'll pay you X amount of money, and then they'll go out and they'll sub-license. They can do it that way, which is just a different twist on a licensing agent, which would be retained by the property owner then to go out and represent them to different categories. But in this case, the agent is just like a
real estate agent. Right, just like a real estate agent has the listing on the house.
Exactly.
So the real estate agent's going to make the commission. So that's what happens. A licensing agent goes and approaches intellectual property or IP.
They approach a manufacturer to basically see if they would be interested in licensing the intellectual property. They work as an exclusive agent for the IP owner.
And so IP owner could be like a broker, right?
IP owner could be a broker, or the IP owner may be the person that invents the IP or owns the intellectual property. And then they hire a licensing agent, much like they would hire a real estate agent, and they give them either non-exclusive or exclusive rights to go out and find them licensees. If they find them licensees, they put the deals together just like a real estate agent, which, you know, they negotiate the terms of it, bring it back to the intellectual property owner. The owner reviews it, and if they like the deal, they sign off on it, and the agent concludes the deal and then helps to facilitate whatever needs to be done for the licensee to be able to make or deliver the service, and then the licensing agent gets paid a commission.
Reinventing the trading card wheel. Tell me about this story.
Well, this was interesting. There was a trading card company, and again, it's a company that was up and coming. They had come up with a new idea, which was basically trading cards have been around for a long time, and most people are familiar with the trading cards that you buy as a baseball players and you get the bubble gum and all that. Well, a new company had come around in the late 80s, and they'd come up with an idea, why don't we come out with a trading card that is going to be 3 times more than any other card out there, but we're going to take the gum out of the wrapper. And so they had come up and developed a line of cards, and they'd gotten the Major League Baseball, but they needed something else. They needed to get into the market because they were an up-and-coming company. They'd gotten their first edition out there. And so what they had done is they had approached Warner Brothers, and basically it was one of these things where they had come up to Warner Brothers, and they basically said, listen, you know, we're looking for something. They didn't know what they were looking for, but they were looking for something. And it was one of those situations where, first of all, at the time they approached Warner Brothers, we had Batman, but Batman already had a trading card licensee on board. But this is one of the interesting things. You never know what companies have in inventory. And in this particular case, as it turns out, this was the late 80s, Warner Brothers had a licensing division that still had finished up and at one time had repped Major League Baseball. But in the interim, what had happened is Major League Baseball and Warner Brothers had come together and decided, why don't we do a joint licensing deal where we'll combine the Looney Tune animated characters with Major League Baseball characters. And we had created this license, but now we had it, we didn't know what to do with it. and it was on our books, and we had done this. Well, lo and behold, this trading card company comes along and starts talking to me, and I'm sitting trying to figure out what to do with them, and then I realize, you know what, I've got an interesting opportunity for you. And so what had happened is they were in the office. I said, you know what, I can't give you a Batman, but I do have an interesting opportunity. How would you like to do baseball cards featuring Bugs Bunny and characters and combine them with Major League Baseball players? Now, initially, you know, we're having these discussions, and everybody's thinking, well, wait a minute, you know, who's going to be interested in trading cards with a bunch of cartoon characters on it and baseball characters on it? That's just not the way it's done. You know, it's baseball or basketball with statistics and bubblegum. This is the way the industry was. We explored that opportunity, and since they were looking for a license, the only thing we had, they said, okay. And it was interesting because along the way, at that time, a number of the original animators were still alive that had created the Looney Tunes cartoons, and we had put together the deal. I had been working with the animators, and so what I had suggested to them is I said, listen, why don't you take a license on this animation and baseball characters, because quite frankly, we didn't have anybody else that was interested in doing it. So we said, why don't you take this license? And by the way, we'll hook you up with one of the animators and have them draw the animation for you. And they said, okay, this sounds good, because we have a couple of retired players who we get to endorse our baseball cards. So why don't we put them in the cards and get the animator to draw the characters and we'll figure something out. So we put this deal together. And again, it was a very low cost deal. I think they got the whole deal for about $5,000. And we sent them a bunch of stuff and said, all right, you got to figure out what to do. Now, you got to keep in mind, this is going to be some new trading card company, and they've got to figure out what they're going to do with this thing. And nobody had ever done anything like this before. What they figured out is they got the animator, and they decided, you know what we'll do is we'll create a line of trading cards where we'll actually tell a little story, you know, like a mini cartoon, if you will, where there'll be 10 or 20 cards in each story, and the whole series will run like 100 cards, and we'll draw them up. So long story short, they had come up with this idea and they got the animation going, and so they had created it and decided to name the line, you know, Comic Ball Cards, and they introduced the line, and basically what happened is the thing took off and wound up being a $30 million product line. $30 million.
That's incredible.
Had no idea this was going to happen.
All kinds of opportunity there.
Tremendous. So anyway, it was a very, very interesting story. And again, it's one that people should understand. You never know what's in the inventory until you venture out and make contact and see what's there.
If you'd like more information on Rand's complete product line on licensing, go to www.licensingsecrets.com. That's www.licensingsecrets.com. .com. Don't forget that extra com. Thanks for listening. The thing is, there's so much stuff that can be licensed. It's all over. It's like a candy store.
It's creativity. It's what are you doing as a manufacturer? You take a look. And keep in mind, you know, because it is a dynamic market, and I always say this and encourage anybody who's an entrepreneur, small business, looking to license out or license in, look, you got to get out in the marketplace. There's so much opportunity. You never know who's doing what, and you can spot opportunities every day, and it's just a question of taking action, getting in there. And like I said, as I shared with a lot of these stories, a lot of these were entrepreneurs who really hadn't thought beyond the fact that I'm going to give a shot at this licensing thing, and they took a chance on a lot of entertainment licenses that the majors or the traditional marketers had said weren't going to work, and they hit gold.
How open are the studios? You know, let's say you're an entrepreneur and you have a totally new category that they've never even considered. Are they open to new categories?
They are open to new categories, but keep in mind they are not in the startup business. They're
I
not
see.
In the business of providing their brands for startups. Do want to approach the studio, you do have to have foundation of a business, a resource. You have to be able to answer the questions that they're going to ask. But they're always open to finding new categories that might be available because it enhances the brand. But, you know, keep in mind, not everything is going to continue to sell forever. So if you've got some new innovative product, and certainly if it's proprietary and you're looking for a way to wrap it, one thing to consider is an entertainment license.
Did you have anything to do with that marshmallow gun?
Marshmallow Shooter. Yeah, they were my client at one time. Yeah, I first met the company years ago when they first introduced the product. It was interesting because the toy company I had at the time out of Australia, they actually merged with the toy company, so they became my client for a very short period of time. But I know all the principals of the company. I just saw them at Toy Fair, and the company has since grown. They've got the Mazooka and the electric one. And they are an example of a very interesting success story because they actually created those as a result of trying to do something for their kid's birthday. They just happened to have a friend of theirs that happens to be a gun engineer. engineer. I mean, a handgun engineer. And so they went to him and they said, you know, we're trying to create something for the kids that they can pop marshmallows out of. So they quickly configured a PVC. It was a favor, just a giveaway, right?
Yeah.
And so the thing went over nuts with the kids. And so the next thing they did is they said, boy, this went over pretty well. Why don't we make a product out of it? So that's where the first marshmallow shooter came up, and whammo, they did about 4 or 5 million in the first year.
For the average guy listening, can I get in this licensing game? Is there anything that you've produced product-wise that someone can learn more about?
Yeah, that's a good point, Mike, and there is. Basically, licensing is a game that everybody can get into, and you're right. We have covered a lot of material, and there's a lot more to cover, and to be able to do that obviously takes a lot of time. So what I did is I created a series of audio products. They're audio products with workbooks to give people the information, the tools, the forms, the contracts, everything they need to get in this game and to be able to go out and acquire licenses or license out. And I created these products to cover a number of areas. The products I have, the first one is an introductory product. It's called Licensing, Creating a Cash Flow Machine. But if they'd like to really find out a complete overview on how licensing works, how you can create these opportunities, how they can generate revenues, it takes you through the process on an introductory level. It explains to you in much more detail the different sectors, how licensing works, licensee, licensor definitions, what some of the contract terms are, how you operate with deal mentors. Gives you a real nice introduction to what the whole process is about, along with some resources that listeners can go to in terms of finding more information, specific places you can tap into to find information either about specific licenses or if they want to get more information from various industry trade associations. I've included that information as well. The second product that I have is Licensing Mastery, from Idea to Income Producing Asset. Now, this is an advanced course that's 4 hours that basically is going from A to Z, in which I take people through the entire process very detailed. Okay, so for listeners who say, okay, I want to learn this process, I want to be able to manage it and execute it myself, this is the course for them. I take you through everything from creating that intellectual property or identifying that intellectual property. Okay, how do you find it? How do you approach it? How do you negotiate it? What type of terms? What are the negotiating techniques? What you should offer? I go through the contracts. I go through the contract process, the deal memos, the licensing agreements. There's merchandise agreements. There's copyright agreements. There's patent agreements, the non-disclosures. This is a course both for licensing and licensing out. I take people through the process of identifying the licenses, going to trade shows, an excellent resource for finding licenses. How do you walk a trade show? How do you present your product at trade shows? So with Licensing Mastery, I'm really giving people the inside details, the inside strategies for licensing. It's interesting. We had talked about some of those inside strategies here in some of the stories that I had shared with you. And what I have done is I have taken those specific strategies, because there's many, many more, and I have those inside secrets, if you will. These are what are contained inside these audio programs. So when you acquire Licensing Mastery, which you truly will become as a master in licensing, I am giving you the specific strategies, all the secrets that I have learned over all the years of licensing. This is information that you're not going to find anywhere else. It's interesting. I've spent many hours in a professional recording studio to put these products together, and the reason I did is because it is such a tremendous opportunity. This is a tool for all small businesses, entrepreneurs, even mid-sized businesses that are looking to expand. Licensing is a powerful tool, and there are many, many ways you can use it. And so what I've created here are giving people not only the tools and techniques, but the inside secrets. How do you negotiate these deals? What are the right negotiating tips? What are some of the secrets that are used to get the best deals? I mentioned that in some of the clients that I talked about, how I acquired all these licenses for very low cost, for $35,000, for little or no cost. This is the information that I have put inside these products, so that listeners who purchase these products are going to be able to go out and apply these techniques and get these deals. These products that I put together are designed so that anybody who listens to these courses, goes through the workbooks, understands the materials, are able to go out, use these techniques, use these secrets, and successfully license in or license out. And so, as I said, the Licensing Mastery is a 4-hour A to Z program. That is really the program. If your listeners want to know, how do I do this? What are the secrets? How do I execute? How do I implement? How do I get these licenses? What are the opportunities? Licensing Mastery is going to give them those tools. Now, those two products really give you the nuts and bolts and secrets of going out and doing the licensing. But beyond that, there's other opportunities, and we talked about some of those. So I created a number of other products for entrepreneurs and small business owners who really want to know about the application of licensing. Among those products are university IP. Now, many people don't know or are unfamiliar with the fact that there's billions and billions and billions of dollars of intellectual property, and I'm talking about from consumer products to nanotechnologies to biotechnologies, that are created every year at universities, and they just sit there waiting for your listeners to simply pick up the phone and call any major university around the country and say, I'm interested in licensing, and they will get a list of all this great intellectual property. And by the way, most of this can be licensed for little or nothing down. Not only can you license it for nothing down, they will give you interns to work on it. They give you, in some cases, office space. They will introduce you to capital sources to help you commercialize it. And you say to me, Rand, now why would they do this? Because they've created all this intellectual property. They're looking for the recognition. They're looking for the research. They're looking because these are the kind of things that attract more students to these universities. And they are an unbelievable opportunity for small businesses and startups to acquire some of the biggest technologies. I created University IP. It is loaded with secrets. Many people don't realize that Google, Netscape, Lycos, Sun, there's many, many other brands that started as university IPs. And many people don't realize that that's where they were created from, and there's such support there. And again, for many businesses, you can acquire for little or no money down, and you are able to get into the market. And these universities will become a tremendous partner, much like we were talking about the studios becoming a partner for you when we share the stories. Well, it's the same thing with the universities. Can you imagine some of these very large universities from MIT to Stanford? These multi-billion dollar companies were all founded on university IP.
Even Google, like, license something from a university?
It was started by university students. It was created off of university IP, intellectual property that was created at the university. Universities are not in the business of commercializing intellectual property. They're in the business of creating it. And for any small business or entrepreneur, if you are looking for an unbelievable source of intellectual property, you've got to get university IP, the billion-dollar startup secret. That's the audio program. In there, I've got an audio program along with a workbook. I list universities you can call right now today. I take you through the entire licensing process. Who do you call? What office to ask for? What the terms are? You can structure deals with universities where you can get an option to license.
Got it. Okay. How about the business process licensing, 90-day cash flow?
That's business process licensing, the 90-day cash flow creator. This is a new product that I just created. You know, it's interesting. Intellectual property has really evolved and changed, especially in the era of the internet and technology. And many people do not realize today that your business processes, your marketing systems are intellectual property. They're known as trade secrets. These could be sales systems, marketing systems, real estate, investment systems, coaching systems, life coaches, business coaches. These are all systems and processes that have been created and used by small businesses, entrepreneurs for many, many years. But these are proprietary systems that they've created.
And you can patent them and secure them?
In some cases they can be patented, but in most cases there's an aspect of intellectual property known as trade secret. And what those are is it's a form of intellectual property, but it's not registered or publicized, if you will, through the registration of copyright or patent. Instead, what it's done is it's licensed out and it retains its confidentiality through a license agreement between the licensee and the licensor.
Just like Coca-Cola formula?
That's what it is. Formulas for beverages, perfumes, recipes, all of those are known as trade secrets. They are not registered as patents. If you did, everybody would know what it is.
But they're protected in the agreements.
They are protected in the agreements. And so business process licensing is a tremendous opportunity for many, many businesses out there that if they are looking for a way to expand their markets, if they're looking a way to create the distribution, if they want to replicate themselves, there's many cases where you might have a company that has developed a unique sales system for selling to businesses, selling to consumers that would be of value and interest to many other companies out there that are looking for ways to better their sales. There are many business coaches out there that have developed systems to help improve business performance that could be licensed to other business coaches or business planners or life coaches. There's many marketing systems out there that could be of benefit to many other business planners or other marketing companies that are looking for new systems that they can share with their customers. And through business process licensing, you're able to do this.
All right, and you go through all of that.
And I take you through what business process licensing is and how you do it and how quickly you can create your cash. You can literally create cash flow in 90 days. That's how fast it can move.
All right, how about niche licensing?
Now, niche licensing is an audio program that I put together that looks at and talks about, I should say, doesn't look at, but what we get into is the fact of an application of licensing. Okay, we've talked about licensing mastery, introduction to licensing. Niche licensing is an audio program in which I've identified 9 different markets, 9 different industries that you can license. There's licensing opportunities inside. They include pets, publishing, entertainment, trademarks and brands, sports, interactive. Okay, those are just some of the markets. And what I do is each one of these half-hour audio presentations talks about what the market is, what the opportunities are, how you identify the opportunities, what you can license, how you can license it, and how you can leverage up on these opportunities. And the reason it's called niche licensing is because these markets are developing very quickly, and there's many, many niche opportunities. Niche markets used to be considered very small. Well, today's niche markets could be a $1 billion market. And for many businesses, they overlook the fact that the marketplace is niching out. It's becoming a series of niche markets. And one of the interesting opportunities or great opportunities that exist for business and entrepreneurs today is you could be licensing into multiple markets. You could be acquiring a license into these different markets. It depends on your product. You may have t-shirts or hats or shorts, whatever the case is. You could be looking at these individual markets, and for anybody that's interested in saying, geez, how can I expand into new markets? That's what this is designed for. You want to get into the pet market. Did you know you could use artwork to license artwork? What about publishing, books? There's a huge market out there, online and interactive. Okay, these are all very large markets, and you can take advantage of these, and understanding what the opportunities are can present literally multi-million dollar opportunities for companies.